Welcome to the first Beatcast of 2026. I'm Francesca Broom, your host and Knowledge Exchange Manager for BBRO. I hope this finds you ready for a busy and happy new year and a healthy one. And the health of your farm will be just one of the topics that we are covering as part of our Beat Tech technical conferences that will be taking place on the 3rd of February at the Norfolk Showground and the 10th of February at Newark Showground. We have an interesting agenda for you, including guest speaker Professor Simon Pearson from the University of Lincoln. He'll be talking about agritech research and its future impact on the sugar beet sector. Make sure you book a place via the BBRO website, where you can also book a slot on this year's drill operators training. Now to this month's podcast, which is a team discussion where everyone has been challenged to keep things clean as we discuss on-farm hygiene.
Here we are in a new year, but an old issue, and we're talking about on-farm hygiene. And I'm really pleased to be joined by a number of the BBRO team. We have Professor Martin Stevens.
Good morning, everybody.
Dr. Georgina Bagg.
Good morning, everybody.
Dr. Alistair Wright.
It might be good afternoon.
And we've got Steve Elvis.
Happy New Year, everybody.
So we're actually here to discuss an old issue that has been something we've talked about for a number of years, and that's on-farm hygiene, which not only impacts on crop protection, so with virus, with disease, with pests, it also has implications when it comes to crop production and the way that we manage it. And I've got the team here now to just discuss what they see as the way forward for us and the possibly increasing threat with climate change for the industry. So what are your thoughts?
I think when it comes to hygiene, Chairs, it's like you alluded to, it's different to everyone. My concern is it's always going to be in the background for growing the crop. But with climate change, climate volatility, we saw what happened with weather patterns in 2025. It's always potentially going to be causing a threat. And so between the industry and the work that we do at BBRO, it's about how we minimize the impact of hygiene on farm. So there's various elements, whether it's crop remnants or cover crops or anything else that's done in other crops that have an influence. It's about minimizing the impact on the pests and diseases that ultimately then could come back and cause a problem in the following crop as we grow it.
So I think hygiene is something that's really easily overlooked. It's often this time of year, it's wet, it's not good trafficability, you shouldn't be going on the field, but you've got to get rid of that spoil from the clean loader or the mouse. And people, I suppose, after a difficult year, don't want to go back in that beet field, but it's so important that we're responsible and try and get rid of, tidy up behind ourselves. And yes, it is difficult. And sometimes you won't be able to go on that field, but then it's thinking about what else you do with that spoil. But gold standard is to return it to the field it came from. That will contain your pests and diseases to that area, and then try and get rid of it. But it's an issue clearly that has been a problem issue to beat for probably 100 years now here in the UK. And you only have to go probably back to the dawn of agriculture that pests and diseases have jumped on the back of any organism we've been trying to grow. But what we can do in our beet crops for 2026 is tidy up behind ourselves. We've had a big beet moth issue. We think hygiene will be a really important way of getting rid of those pupae that will be trying to overwinter. They're very cold tolerant. So what we want to do is bury them deep so that when the moths emerge in the spring, they've got a upward challenge against them having to creep up through all that soil. Probably won't eliminate them all, but at least it tries to reset us on the front foot.
Yeah, I mean, as Alistair said, obviously we're now into the new year. Conditions on the land can be more challenging. Obviously dealing with mouse lines and spore heat from clean loaders in September, October can be quite easy. Although, you know, you might be inclined to do more minimum tillage post-beet in those months when it is friable. But definitely behind a mouse line, you might consider just ploughing that area of the field. Obviously, we're now into the new year. Ploughing on farm is becoming more and more prevalent as the conditions are obviously more challenging. So a lot of ploughing is already happening, but we would ask growers to consider the moth pressure, before the crop came out? And is it maybe a change of mentality that they might go back to the plough post beat and get that turned over again, as I was explaining, to bury those pupae down?
It's not a case of use it in every field. It's target those worst affected areas. And I think definitely ploughing down behind the mouse line is of a huge benefit, because you've effectively concentrated all that pest and disease pressure into a very small footprint, and you need to get rid of it, because we see it year after year. You go where a mouse line has been put, ideally not on the field that's going to be sugar beet the year ahead, but that is often the case because it tends to be a stubble field the year before, and you see a massive Cercospora pressure. Those root remnants are going to be hosting aphids and virus potentially, those, especially those that have fallen through the cleaner or the mouse. They're going to be the smaller ones, more likely to have virus in. And then, of course, moth pressure as well. So we've now got to think really in the round about those different issues.
We had a good question a couple of weeks back from someone on what they should do if they're spoiled, because they'd actually put the crop, well, there was a crop put into the field where the spoil had come from. So we did have a question there of what to do with that. So in that situation, if you've drilled the field that your beet have come off of and the spoil came off of, what do you reckon is the best plan?
It's a really difficult situation, and but it is so common. Obviously, any beet being loaded from January through to the end of campaign is probably going to end up with some spoil sat on a heap somewhere. I think for us, it's making sure you don't forget about it. It's not just pile up at the corner and hope it goes away. It won't. There's a few things we are wanting to experiment with ourselves. We're covering them to try and either increase temperature or just contain any moth in those heaps. And obviously restrict access for virus and all the other reasons that we're talking about hygiene. But yeah, definitely keeping an eye on them, whether we just desiccate them with Roundup just to make sure any regrowth is killed off, whether we have the opportunity to mechanically move them to try and break that as well. And equally take the first opportunity you get to either return it to parent field or another field where you don't have concerns of contaminating with BCN or everything else that might be contained in there. So it's just keep it at the front of your mind, really, I think.
Stephen has touched on BCN there, Alistair. Obviously, that's your remit. How big a problem is it across the area?
Definitely an underappreciated problem. So the BCN guide we published last year has the most up-to-date map of incidents in it, but we think it's much greater than that. So we used to think it was about 10% of the growing area. I'll be more inclined to now think it's 30 to 50% really. And it's now it's a mindset change about how you manage those farms, whereas before it used to be a case of if you've got a field that's infected, you grow a tolerant variety there. Well, it's probably now more likely actually with various bits of kit and the wind or even ourselves moving through the fields with our boots, we'd move cysts onto uninfected areas of those farms. So now it's changing your seed order to fully tolerant varieties to ensure that we're managing that threat. But it is a mindset change, and clearly we need to make sure adequate amounts of seed are available in the future to allow that.
I think also actually with some of the BCN tolerant varieties being such high yields anyway, they've been grown on farm where they haven't known if they have or have not got BCN. So actually, it's kind of hidden the problem. And with introduction of cover crops, actually, the situation will be made worse. I mean, they're growing the right variety without knowing it. But it's also being conscious of, am I growing cover crops, picking the right mixes, so that problem isn't exacerbated.
Well, every year we get more and more cases in plant clinic of people saying, oh, I don't have BCN, but what are these cysts? And like, well, you have to put two and two together there. So yes, it is thinking about cover crops, other hosts in the rotation for BCN. So what are the brassicas are being grown? Are they in for a long period of time, which will offer huge amounts of multiplication to occur? But even planting a susceptible brassica in the summer, subalternates is a classic example, we know will allow one generation to build up, and you can go from the very low population where your sugar beet would be absolutely fine, especially if they're tolerant, to actually now a situation where you're really pushing that genetic to the limit and you may start to see some symptoms.
Yeah, you raise a good one there, because stubble turnips are so popular ahead of beet for their grazing benefits. So they are...
It's no secret. It's my enemy number one.
that closely followed by Phacelia. But I think that segues nicely into the risk that we're having with cover crops on farm. Don't get me wrong, Bibro, very much supportive of cover crops. They do have a host of benefits, all the environmental schemes that you can get payment for, but they do pose a risk, both from a green bridge point of view. So we've touched on nematodes, but also hosting virus and hosting aphids. Most of you will be familiar with the Bibro cover crop guide, which has some information on it with each species of cover crop, the most popular ones, whether they host virus and also whether they're tasty for aphids. Also, you need the two together for it to be a real risk. And as much as we joke, we aren't pro or anti any specific cover crop. What we are keen on is you just being aware of the risks and that they pose to the shoulda beet crop, and making sure you get good timely destruction. So that's 6 weeks completely dead and gone between the end of the cover crop period and the sowing of the sugar beet. And then thinking back to before you even get to destruction to choose the right mix to make sure that you can get it off, killed off quickly and that it doesn't pose a risk. We do get a lot of problems with heavier sore types, challenges in destruction. And so just considering, again, lower seed rates, a slightly less well-established cover crop can be beneficial in those situations. But yeah, the key message there is before you even put that cover crop in, just think about your risks on farm and think ahead of how you're going to destroy it and get it killed in before that 6 week gap.
Because we can't rely on the weather to do it for us. So minimizing that risk is really, really important. And that 6 week break is critical, particularly things about aphids, but everything else that may be coming into the next crop.
And where you've got a grower that's actually had a big issue, say with beet moth or with virus in the past, does that increase that ongoing risk?
It's hard to quantify, but logic would say yes. Obviously, if you've had a high pressure the year before, for me, it's just controlling the things you can control. It's all about risk management. If we know we've had high pressure, then let's go out of our ways, do everything we can to bring that level down before we start putting the next crop in. And obviously, my background is tillage, and I would, you know, take the opportunities you can. Again, I would encourage you to think of the plough as a crop protection product, not just something that makes the soil brown. How can we deploy that to get the most control that we can, whether it's virus, beet moth, whatever, you know, pressure in, who knows what the future holds as well. So
I think you touched on a really good point there. There's no one singular approach that's better or worse. It's tailoring it to knowing what your risk is in your situation, also adapting to the year. For example, occasionally we are lucky enough in some ways to get a heavy frost that will knock your cover crop back a bit, have a bit of control there, but other years we don't. So it's having that flexibility in your system and adjusting to what you're seeing happening on farm.
And if we look back at last year, we had some really cold weather in January, which clearly knocked the aphids back. And we didn't see the aphid forecast until early May. But then conditions in the season were very warm and dry and favoured the aphids that had survived and probably oilseed rape. So although we need to appreciate it can help, like Stephen's just alluded to, George as well, that if there's a risk there from a previous season, it won't have gone away. So we mustn't forget hygiene. It should still always be at the focus of your attention to do whatever you can do to minimise its impact.
And groundkeeper management, I think we shouldn't forget about that either. After what's been a difficult year in 2025, there's probably a few more smaller beet that fell through the harvesters and might well be lying in the canopy of your cereal. So go and have a look and just ensure that when you can, the herbicide Progone does knock them on the head, because that's, again, going to be an important reservoir of aphids and virus over winter. And we now cannot control them mechanically if they're in your cereal, so that we then rely on chemical. But
yeah, I definitely agree. Obviously, we had some very favourable lifting conditions September through October. A lot of land was turned around with minimal tillage into cereal crops. So there is a risk. Obviously, with the drought year that we had, a lot of small beet did end up back on the field. That's part of the problem. So I would imagine there are some groundkeepers there, and hopefully we get a dry end to the campaign as well, and we might return back to those situations. But equally, we would keep in mind high pressure, maybe consider the plan, but definitely watch for those groundkeepers.
And similar with beet moth, those fields that maybe weren't cultivated and now have a cereal in them, we're likely to probably see some pupae there, but might well be early sites for moths to emerge from in the spring. So we're going to be out with our traps and start our monitoring early just to see when they are on the move, because we're hoping that won't be until late spring, early summer, and fingers crossed, we get a nice wet spring and we get a nice vigorous sugar beet canopy and the beet grow away from any potential risk. But if we see a repeat of last year, drought conditions, we need to be on the front foot of thinking about controlling those moths when they in that first generation.
So it's quite clear that this is an ongoing challenge and we're not going to solve it in this year, next year, or probably 3 or 4 years. But there are things that growers can do. So can we just have a point from each of you as to what we need to actually really take seriously for this year?
Yeah, sure. I don't think I've ever talked about ploughing quite so much, but I think for me, obviously, we are encouraging you to use the plough strategically. I may have inspired you to go out and plough straight away and bury that mouse line. I would just say be patient. We want to plough, but we want to plough well. So we might have to wait for some of those conditions to dry up a bit. As long as we're ploughing ahead of the next beet crop, we should be fine. But yeah, so just be patient and try and do it as well as possible.
Contrary to that on the patience front, when it comes to cover crop destruction, obviously aim for 1st of March drilling and work back from there and get nice timely application of glyphosate. If you've got clover in there as well, Kylio with 2,4-D in it can be a good approach, but making sure full rate of glyphosate on as early as possible to get that good destruction and that 6-week break between the end of the cover crop and the drilling of the beet.
Keep an eye on the aphid virus yellows forecast on the 1st of March because they're going to be critical to give you an indication of the risks for the season. And just don't forget hygiene.
And then I suppose to sum it all up, where you've got spoil heaps, just think about managing them sensibly. Send them back where they came from if you can. If not, try and remove that spoil as far away from next year's beet crop and store it until the summer because that will help with your aphids, your moths. Foliar diseases, the whole shebang, really. Just make sure that you take a sensible and pragmatic approach and give hygiene the attention it deserves.
Yeah, and attention it definitely does deserve because this is, as we said, it's an ongoing issue. And we are talking about yield here, the impact that could have such a detrimental effect. So thank you all very much for your input. And we look forward to seeing the results on farm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All the best.
A big thank you to the team for their input there. And if you haven't made a New Year resolution yet, may it be for a healthy year for you and your farm. Thank you very much for listening.